This is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, and hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it'll be reality and not illusion or delusion that determines what the future will bring. Now, we want to convince you, if we can, that America today is really locked in a life-and-death struggle. A struggle between those people who believe in total government control over the lives of the people and those of us who believe in individual freedom under God. Those people who believe in a new world order and those people who believe that individuals should be free and that America should remain as a sovereign nation. And on the outcome of this battle will determine the future course of Western civilization. The tragedy is the other people on the other side know the war is going on, and most people on our side really don't understand what's going on. They just want to be left alone to live their lives. And I'm sure a lot of those boys who went to Vietnam to fight for us 2 decades ago just wanted to live their own lives. But unfortunately, they were not to be allowed to. Well, I want to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of KKMC, but are my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we ask you to hold your calls until the half hour. You can call us, however, at that time at 464-8295 or outside the Santa Cruz dialing area, 1-800-5-TALK-TO-YOU. That's 1-800-582-5528. And furthermore, we remind you that we are listener-supported, and if you agree with our efforts to bring the alternative outlook on what's going on, why, you can write to us here at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063, and certainly we need your prayers for provision and protection. And so, without further ado, I want to go to our very special guest this afternoon, who is in Canada. Her name is Monica Stevenson, and formerly she was with the Columbia Broadcasting System with CBS. She was a producer. Monica, were you a producer, or what was your job with 60 Minutes?
Yes, I was a producer.
And this whole thing started when a group of parents of the boys who had been abandoned in Vietnam came to her and convinced her she should actually try to do a CBS documentary on the boys we left behind. And so would you like to pick up the story from there, what really happened?
Well, actually, I started looking into the story because of a prisoner who came back in 1979, and most people might not think of him that way. His name was Bobby Garwood, and he came back. He had been in prison for 14 years, and when he stepped off the plane in Bangkok, he was read his rights, and that led to a court-martial, and he was found guilty of collaborating. Now, at the beginning, when I started doing the story for 60 Minutes, I really thought that that was it, that he was a collaborator, that he was a traitor, and I wanted to do a portrait of the traitor. And as I got into the story, I realized that he was no such thing. He had been a prisoner, and he had been betrayed by his own country, and he had been smeared by his own country, because if they had not taken that course, there would have been an uproar, because a lot of other men were also left behind. A lot of other prisoners were left behind. Our government was aware of that because it had the intelligence. It had absolutely miraculous intelligence, billions of dollars worth of intelligence. And I began working with the families, as you said, and also with a very special person who just died this year, General Eugene Tai, who had been the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency and had seen all of this intelligence. And he is the one who said that we had a miracle. There was no question in his mind that many men were left behind, thousands. And so we sort of worked together to get the program on the air, but it was very difficult. And this was the first time it happened in my career. I mean, I never really believed that the American government would try to interfere in a news program, but they did with this. I got personal calls from people on the National Security Council, threats, telling me not to do the story. And when I went ahead with it anyway, they began to slander everyone, including General Tai, prisoners who had come back, like Eugene Red McDaniel, who had been the most tortured prisoner, started telling me that these people had been involved in criminal activities, that they were senile, that they, well, whatever you can think of. And I just knew that wasn't true, and I just kept getting more and more involved out of stubbornness at first. And they did almost kill the show, but finally, because of General Tai's involvement, it had to go on, not in the time slot that it had been originally planned for. And I realized that there was a much, much bigger story that needed to be told. I mean, you couldn't tell it in a 60 minutes piece, and so I talked my husband into doing a book with me. He's an author, and we did a book together called Kiss the Boys Goodbye.
William Stevenson is one of my favorite authors. Next to you, he wrote the book A Man Called Intrepid, which I thought was one of the great stories of the Second World War. So your husband is a well-known author, and this was your first attempt at writing?
Doing that kind of writing, I've written shorter pieces before, and of course written for television before, but I hadn't done a book. But I have to tell you that it was very difficult to get my husband involved, because I think for a long time he thought I was going crazy. I mean, he did not want to believe this, and thought that I was chasing some kind of a dragon.
Well, I think most people don't want to believe that our government could be intentionally betraying those boys that we left behind.
Yeah, it's not almost a palatable thought, and of course this was true with a lot of the families. You know, they believed the government when they said, well, wait, we're doing whatever we can. Some of them waited 15, 20 years. But they knew, because, you see, I mean, they've been presented in the media as distraught widows and rather stupid, simple people who simply can't face the fact that they lost their men in war. But that's not true. Most of these people are highly intelligent. A lot of them come from military families. I mean, they're people have been in the service through four generations sometimes. They're very, very smart about intelligence. I mean, General Tai had the highest opinion of them, and they had really collected there was a whole network of people and a whole network of information that I was able to tie into, and it was absolutely top-notch. And it's better, because the government has worked so hard to either change the intelligence or to destroy it. The basics really were kept by these people. Some of them, like Colonel Hopper, whose son was also colonel and missing. I mean, he is one of the finest intelligence people you could come across. So that, in combination with the fact that one of my husband's former colleagues was also onto this, and actually, he's an Englishman, and they had been correspondents together in India. And he comes from a very well-known military family in England. His father was a general. And one night we were having dinner together. My husband had, up until this point, thought I was nutsy.
And his friend said,
verified what I had said, and he said, there is a Gestapo operating in the United States. Well, that made my husband really sit up, and then
Monica, you're going to have to hold that right there, because we've got to take our first commercial break here. But we want to talk about a video which every one of you out there who has an ounce of patriotism or is concerned about the boys we abandoned should see. It's put out by Captain Red McDaniels, who Monica was just recently discussing, certainly one of the most tortured, one of the senior officers captured by the North Vietnamese. It's an amazing story. It's called Americans Betrayed. It's professionally done. You'll see Robert Dornan, Congressman Robert Dornan, telling about when he went to Vietnam and the North Vietnamese said, well, you talk about the money, we'll talk about the boys. But, of course, you're not going to see that mentioned through the regular media. It's an amazing video, and you can get it by calling right now our 800 number, which is 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. To get Americans Abandoned, the story of the boys that were betrayed by the American government. And this is Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Monica Stevenson, who's written one of my favorite books, Kiss the Boys Goodbye. And incidentally, if you want to get a copy of it, we still have a few left. You can call us here at 464-8295 and tell our call Schreiner, and he'll get your name and address. We'll be back in touch with you. But you were saying that a gentleman, a friend of your husband's, had come over, and he had started talking to your husband about the fact that there was an American Gestapo, and he was not at all surprised with the story that we had intentionally abandoned the boys and there was a massive cover-up.
No, because, and what he verified is the way that the government was mucking into the media, because they had tried to put pressure on the BBC in Washington and had even tried to set up one of the correspondents who was working on this, whose office actually happened to be across from mine. And they actually tried to set him up with drugs. And so, you know, that brought my husband around. I'm not so sure that he doesn't regret still that I got involved in this story, because, you know, what happens is that, and you touched on that, one doesn't really want to believe all this, and when one knows it, and one knows it absolutely, then one still doesn't want to. I mean, I really wish that I had the beliefs that I had 10 years ago and could go back to that life. I don't like the idea of bringing up my child with that, you know, with that knowledge. But it is there.
Yeah, well, we really have to be involved in this battle, because your daughter and my grandchildren's lives are at stake. And if we lose this battle against those dark and sinister forces, which I believe are working behind the scenes, then our children and grandchildren really have no future. And so we have to do what we know is right, even though sometimes we wish we were like everybody else. Well, anyway, as the story unfolded, it became obvious that there was an organized effort to keep the boys from coming home. What motivated this?
Well, at the beginning, I think that we were just, and when I say we, I mean the people who were making the decisions, like Secretary of State Kissinger, and the bureaucrats who were behind that, were just in a tearing hurry to get out of the war. Also, we had been involved in a lot of activities that we should not have been, you know, undeclared. I mean, I personally think we could have just declared it. We were there anyway, but we did not. Became a matter of saving face internationally, not to admit that we were fighting in Laos, not to admit that we were fighting in Cambodia. And, I mean, really fighting, we were sending in our soldiers, but we were sending in our soldiers without protection. They were not CIA people. They were soldiers who were sent in without uniforms. And that is really the largest group of prisoners that was never acknowledged, that we just abandoned, because we didn't want to say that we had been there. We didn't want to lose face in that way. We didn't want to make the payments that had to be made. And so we just wrote off the men.
The thing was that certainly the communists knew we were there. The rest of the world knew we were there. We just didn't want the American people to know we were there.
Well, that's right. But also we thought that, you know, we could fool the world by simply not admitting it. You know, it's like the emperor had no clothes. It would go away. And I think there probably was this belief that, well, the men couldn't survive anyway. And then there was a really very invidious aspect to it that still bothers me. You know, it was actually part of the rules that when these young men went in, and you know what young men are like, they, none of them believe that it's going to happen to them. It is true that a lot of them signed agreements that, you know, that they knew that they wouldn't be acknowledged if they were taken prisoner, and that, you know, we would just forget about them. But I don't think that whatever the situation was during the war with that, that doesn't count when the war is over and the peace agreements have been signed. You then don't let all those young men who were sent in as soldiers sit there and rot, and that's what we did. And there are still people who will tell you, there were people in the government who told me this when I was working on this story, that, well, you know, they knew what they were getting into.
Well, you know, it was Ronald Reagan who said, you know, a nation that will betray its fighting men will also betray its citizens. And didn't Ronald Reagan initially try to get to the bottom of this?
Well, you know, at the beginning of his administration, yes, there were some very important missions, and they came very close. Again, the intelligence was absolutely top-notch. The problem was that those missions were actually compromised, and they were compromised from our side.
You're speaking of Colonel Bill Greitz.
Yes, that was one of them. But there were, Bill Greitz's missions got a lot of publicity, also, I think, from some of the people who were involved with him. And I'm not so sure that that was a good way to do it. But they were compromised. You know, they're radio free. American programs would announce in Laos that these people were coming. And
in other words, that
just ended the whole thing. They'd announce it in Laotian and in English.
In other words, he's going in on a secret mission, and the American radio is telling them that he's coming.
That's right.
Incredible, you know, and yet this actually happened. And each time he was betrayed by the American government as he was going in, risking his life to save the boys.
That's right. And the people who were involved in these very secret groups that were organizing this, like one of the men who headed this organization, their lives were ruined. I mean, their careers were absolutely cut off at the knees. So, you know, after a while, I mean, some of those people are hard to talk to now, and were already hard to talk to when I spoke to them, because, you know, it comes to the point where you really have to make a decision whether you want your whole life wiped out. If you are in a profession like that, if you're in the Pentagon, if you're in the intelligence services, and suddenly you face losing all of that after you've spent your whole life in it, it's a difficult one to make.
In other words, if you tell the truth and you try to save the boys, you lose out, and if you don't, then you have to battle with your conscience, because you know you've betrayed the trust that those men had in you and the government.
That's right. Well, this is what happened to Colonel Peck. This is about 3-4 years ago. He moved in as the new head of the POW unit in the Pentagon, and tried to get to the bottom of it. Now, he was a man who had, I think he got the second highest medal you could get. He had an impeccable military record, and suddenly he saw the truth. And well, the way he spoke about it the last time I saw him was, it was at a time when the Vietnamese actually came to the American government and said, listen, we want to start on this roadmap toward diplomatic relations and economic relations, and if you don't go along with this, we will return your prisoners. And he said this at a public meeting, yes, in Washington, and there were media present. I've never heard this written about yet in anything other than small town papers, yes, or small town radio stations.
Right. Yes.
And he said, when I realized that we were acquiescing to that, he said, I resigned. And he did, and his resignation letter was very strong, and he tacked it on the door with his Bowie knife.
I remember that.
Now, he has disappeared. I mean, you know, the rumors started the day after, one that he dyes his hair. That was a big one. All kinds of slanderous things that you just have to look at the man's record to know that it isn't true. And after that, they also realized that they had to destroy the committee, which was minority portion of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that had been doing excellent work on this. The investigator, Tracy Ussery, was absolutely fantastic. I have copies of his report cards throughout his military service. He's a CID man, and it's A-plus all the way through. They managed to destroy him.
Was this the Helms Committee report?
That's right. That's right. They were so effective, you see, that they decided they had to get rid of it and replace it with the Senate Select Committee, which was a joke.
Sure, and of course that was Kerry, and that was all a cover-up.
Well, but this is what happens, and it's very, you know, people think that this is small-time stuff, but it's not. One hits oneself against a power that is so great and that has so much money available to it that it's very hard to see how one can make a dent.
Only the truth can possibly impact on this, and this is what we're doing here on Radio Liberty, and other people are doing all across the country. Now, how does this all tie into the drugs? Because this is an important part of your book, the involvement of the American government in drug trafficking.
Well, it was just that during the war, we, in those areas like Laos, we had to hire a lot of indigenous people to fight for us. And, I mean, our armies were made up of mostly those people, and a lot of those people were taken prisoner, too, and were treated no better than our side. But the way we paid them was with drugs.
In other words, we were buying drugs and giving to them?
We were involved in the drug business, in raising it, buying it, selling it, and then paying them with it. The problem was that, I mean, that was bad enough that, you know, that our governmental service, our military services were involved with that. But the profits, if you've ever, and I've lived in that part of the world, the profits are so phenomenal that naturally a lot of the people who were involved in doing this sort of officially or semi-officially got involved personally. And from that point forward, there has always been a legal line of drugs that goes into the United States. And those monies from that legal line are used to fund offline activities.
But for the Central Intelligence Agency?
Yes, and other intelligence groups, but that primarily. And, of course, this is the connection with, and it goes across party lines. I mean, the Bush administration was very heavily involved in this. A lot of those people who were involved go all the way back to Vietnam. And they were using the airstrips in Arkansas with the consent of the governor at that time.
So you
see how invidious the whole thing is.
So that's the MENA tie-in then, the MENA airport tie-in.
Well, yes.
You know, the whole story becomes so incredible. You know, if you weren't a very credible individual, as I had researched this from so many other points of view, I'd say it couldn't be. But to the listeners out there, ladies and gentlemen, this is the truth. And Monica, former CBS producer for 60 Minutes, you were sort of pushed out of your job there, weren't you, after you...
Well, no, I wasn't really pushed out. It's just that I was absolutely flabbergasted that I wasn't getting the support. I mean, I just couldn't believe it because I thought very highly of my colleagues. And I couldn't believe that, one, they would stand by while national security people were calling us up and threatening us. And I didn't like the kind of sort of politicking that went on with the network. I found out later that the president of CBS at the time, who later left, and I really didn't get to know him until we were both gone from the network, but he explained to me how it probably had worked. He had been excluded from this.
I'm going to have to interrupt you because we've got to go to our next commercial break, and I just want to mention to our listeners, if you'd like a copy of Monica Stevenson's book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, I should say Monica and William Stevenson's book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, it reads like an adventure novel. The tragedy is, it's really true. Tom Clancy couldn't have come up with anything more bizarre, more incredible, and yet this is the story of the boys who trusted America, who trusted you, out in the listening audience, that you'd never betray them. Kiss the Boys Goodbye. You can call 464-8295. That's 1-800-5. Talk to you. And this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this afternoon. Monica Stevenson, who is co-author of the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye. And before we went for our break, you were telling us about a conversation you had with the ex-president of CBS who'd been there at that time.
Well, yeah, the way he explained that it works is really it happens at parties, you know. The vice president's house is next to Kissinger's. They summer together at Martha's Vineyard. And when something like this comes up, Kissinger just pulls them aside and gives them the lowdown and tells them the truth, in quotation marks. And, you know, it puts his spin on it, and that's when things begin to spin for somebody who's working as a reporter, producer, like I was. I mean, I certainly didn't think I was naive. I had done a lot of pretty heavy investigative pieces. I'd done pieces on the mob, but I really had no idea how power works. And that's what I learned from this. I mean, there is no way that anyone with any association in the government wants or can afford to have these men come back. And I believe that one at least will come back, because you just can't get rid of them all. I mean, last year, two Japanese walked out of the jungles of Malaysia, so that, you know, eventually it will happen. But it will be a very Pyrrhic victory.
Well,
but
actually, within the last month, a Korean War prisoner, a South Korean, actually crossed into China and got back to South Korea and told about the literally thousands of Koreans who are still in prison camps going back to the time of the Korean War.
Absolutely.
Incredible, and guess that's been totally blanked out by the media in America, so that I doubt that one out of 1,000 of our listeners has ever heard that fact.
And if they've heard it, they still don't want to believe it. It doesn't matter. And, you know, the man who was, while I was sort of involved in this for the largest period of time, who was in charge of this issue, was finally removed from the job and kind of moved out of government for a while. And then when the Soviet Union started making noises after the big changes there, Yeltsin said that, you know, that he had come across evidence that Americans had been taken to the Soviet Union, that there were still prisoners from the Second World War.